You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host, and today we have with us Karen Schroyer from the White River National Forest. She's the Aspen Sopris District Ranger. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Bill.
You know, some people don't know the difference between the Forest Service, the Park Service, the Bureau of Land Management, Fish and Wildlife Service. Tell us how you fit into all that hodgepodge of federal agencies.
It can be complicated. The Aspen Sopris Ranger District is a part of the White River National Forest, and we've got about 750,000 acres on this district. That's part of the greater national forest and grasslands that are about 193 million acres. So it's just a fraction of a big system of public lands. There's also the Bureau of Land Management, as you said, Fish and Wildlife Service, National Park Service. In terms of how we manage the land, each of us has a little bit different mission. The Forest Service is mandated under the Multiple Use Sustained Yield Act of 1960. And so we manage for a number of different resources across the acres of land that we manage. The National Park Service, in comparison, is managed under a protect and preserve mission. So they are protecting and preserving cultural and natural resources for future generations, compared to the Forest Service and the BLM, who are managing for these multiple uses across acres of land.
I'm sure a lot of people are interested in what a ranger does, what their typical day is, because I meet a lot of people that I'd like to be a ranger. I've always wanted to be a ranger. So tell us what you do in a typical day, if there is such a thing.
Well, on a typical day, it's probably not very exciting for most people. I go to a lot of meetings, but I love that. I love people, and I get a chance to meet with stakeholders, community members, county commissioners, and our employees, and work through difficult issues and project proposals to better manage the land. A typical day might include meeting with employees and partners about a project proposal, maybe going out on a project site to take a look at specific things for that project. It might mean meeting with county commissioners and giving them updates on what we're doing on the district. And if I'm lucky, I get outside.
So that must be the favorite part of your job, being outside then?
You guessed it. I'm lucky enough to get out there about once a week.
I know you work with a lot of partners and do a lot of collaboration. There's a thing called the Future Forest Roundtable. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
You bet. The Future Forest Roundtable has been around for several years. It's a gathering of about 30 different partner organizations. We meet three times a year, and it's an opportunity for stakeholders to get together and discuss current issues that are facing the National Forest, as well as coming up with solutions and how to solve those issues. We just had a Future Forest Roundtable meeting in Aspen last week, and it was very successful.
So it sounds like you have your ear to the ground, so to speak, and you're listening to other people and taking in their input.
Yeah, we wouldn't be able to make the tough decisions that we make without our stakeholders. And, you know, we don't claim to be the experts on every issue. That's why we reach out and ask the opinion of the public and stakeholders and partners on every piece of work that we do.
Having sat in your chair as an acting ranger a few years ago, we won't say how many, I appreciate, you know, how complex your job is and how busy you are. Tell us about the top three projects you're currently working on.
You bet. One of them I think you're familiar with. We are in the middle of an environmental assessment for the Maroonbell Snowmass High-Use Wilderness, and we hope to have a decision on that later this year that allows us to implement an adaptive management plan for the Maroonbell Snowmass Wilderness. And that adaptive management plan looks at different zones across the wilderness, and depending on the visitor use and the impacts to resources, it allows us to make different management changes, including limiting overnight use in some areas.
Like what area would you be limiting overnight use in, established campgrounds or particular areas that have a lot of visitation?
Well, a couple of areas that we're already looking at that have kind of reached the threshold of impact and need to have some adaptive management are Conundrum Hot Springs and the Four Pass Loop. And we hope to implement a Conundrum Hot Springs overnight limited use program beginning as early as 2018.
A lot of people go there to Conundrum Hot Springs. I've seen on social media, on Facebook, where come to the party and they have 30 or 40 people in that little small area there. Are you able to use social media to try to encourage people not to overuse areas, or how are you doing with social media here?
You bet. We use social media as a tool quite a bit. If you notice that we're on Facebook, and we'd love to have you like us on Facebook. That's how we get a lot of information out. You know, we use Twitter as well. We also use our partners. The Forest Conservancy is a great partner up at the Maroon Bells Scenic Area. They talk to a lot of backpackers and hikers that enter the wilderness, and they inform them on the impacts that they can have while they're back there and how to better prepare for their backpacking and hiking experiences. You know, we saw an increase of over 285% on overnight use at Conundrum Hot Springs in the last 10 years, and that's a pretty astounding number. The impacts from that have been just tremendous. We see a lot of human waste up there that's not disposed of properly. Our rangers are carrying out hundreds of pounds of garbage each year out of the wilderness. And we have some human wildlife impacts too, some conflicts between habituated bears and backpackers who aren't storing their food properly. So the Forest Conservancy helps us quite a bit with getting that educational information out. We also partner with our local retail stores who help us educate folks on the need to purchase and use bear-resistant food canisters in the area.
I bought a couple of those myself. Even if I'm not in the Maroon Bells, I like to be able to store my food in a fashion that the bears don't come and visit me. And people today seem to think they can just stroll into the wilderness and flip-flops and everything's going to be fine. When I started hiking into wilderness areas in the 60s, a choice was between Kelty backpacks and an army surplus. And it seems like people just have a more Disney idea that the animals in the area is there without any dangers. What would you say to people that want to go into the wilderness and have never done that before?
You know, I'd say the first thing you always want to do is check with the local ranger station first. Call them or check their local website and just see what kind of rules and restrictions are out there. Because, you know, the rules and regulations that are pertaining to that particular area you're visiting, they're there because of incidents or impacts that have happened in the past and the need to manage that area differently. So it's always good to get familiar with your ranger district or your local land area before you visit it. Get your maps out, plan your trip out, and practice those leave no trace ethics as well.
So it's know before you go. That's the best thing people
yep.
can do. Okay, that's one project, Maroon Bells Wilderness Area. Give us one more project other than the three I asked for.
You bet. We're also working on the Upper Frying Pan Vegetation Management Environmental Assessment. So again, this is a NEPA process. We're in the middle of the environmental assessment. We've outreached to our local constituents and asked for comments. And this is a project where we're proposing about 1,900 acres of vegetation management that would be providing timber to local industries, as well as improving some wildlife habitat and creating a more resilient forest.
Has the completion of the Crystal River Trail come up on your radar yet? If so, what do you do to make that project happen? If not, what's the plans in the future, and how long would it take to complete that project on your district?
You bet. The Carbondale to Crested Butte Trail is a proposed project through Pitkin County Open Space and Trails, and they have yet to bring a proposed action to the district, but they are doing a great job of public outreach right now and just getting feedback from their local communities on how they feel about this proposed 40-mile, I'd say approximately 40-mile trail between Carbondale and Crested Butte. So it really hasn't been an impact to us yet in terms of workload. Pitkin County is the proponent. They will bring the proposed action in later this year. We'll probably have an environmental analysis that lasts about a year before a decision is made on that trail. And, you know, if the decision is to move forward with some sort of trail between Carbondale and Crested Butte, then I would expect implementation is just going to be based on the money and the time that it takes to build the trail. There's a number of sections that are already completed, so this would just be a matter of completing the unfinished portions.
So give us an estimate on how many years you think that's going to take.
Oh, I'd say implementation after a decision is made would probably, I'm guessing, you know, 3-4 years.
So a lot of people come just into the Forest Ranger District office and want a project done right away, kind of fast food land management. It doesn't happen, does it?
Fast food land management. No. And, you know, that can be frustrating, but at the same time, I think it's good. There's a process that we have to go through. The National Environmental Policy Act requires us to go through these analysis processes on every project that gets proposed. And, you know, it requires us to reach out to the public and get their feedback and take that into consideration when we're making these decisions. And it's complicated, but I think it's a good process, and I think we make better decisions because of it.
So it works. It's not broken. Keep doing it.
Yeah.
because I think, you know, a lot of people think that the forest, you can just go do what you want to do. You don't have to have a permit for this or that. And they need to check with the local ranger district before they do any ground disturbing action or anything that could impact cultural resources or endangered species. And all those regulations are in place for a reason. Those laws are in place for a reason. But people, when they comment, they actually are listened to, I think, in terms of the all of a sudden it slipped my mind.
Thompson Divide.
The Thompson Divide area. There I go. Needed a memory jog there for sure. So the public input for that project for future leasing on the White River, people were listened to, weren't they?
You bet. That was an important decision.
That was the point I was trying to make in all my roundabout fashion there. Do you have an adequate workforce to do the job you do? Do you have any openings now? And if so, how could someone apply for those openings? How do people get to work for the government to become a ranger?
That's a great question. You know, staffing on this ranger district is always a challenge. It's expensive to live in the Roaring Fork Valley. The cost of living is high. But, you know, the quality of life is high, too. And so our the people that do come here to work are extremely happy. And we've been lucky enough to be able to go forward with our seasonal hiring this summer. And we're planning on hiring about 15 to 20 seasonal employees. That's a great way to get your foot in the door and to experience the Forest Service as a temporary employee to see if that's something you want to do on a longer term. And we get a lot of work done with those seasonal employees. They clear trail. They greet visitors at Maroon Bells. They help us keep the toilets clean. They just do a lot of great work for us.
And that's a lot of fun for young people to get their start with the Forest Service as a seasonal.
Yeah, and applying for a job is done through the USA Jobs website, so usajobs.gov.
Is it still too late to apply for this summer?
It might not be too late. We're hoping to get referral lists for most of our seasonals here in the next week or two, but we may be going back out for some additional hiring if we're not able to fill all those vacancies with these lists.
Well, there you go. If you're interested in applying for a summer job, better get with it there, it sounds like. What do you think the biggest threat is to managing the lands you're responsible for as a line officer?
Well, we face a lot of challenges working with the Forest Service, and those challenges, I think, are also our greatest opportunities. To me, the greatest challenge of this job is just working with multiple uses and understanding that there's a pie that we have that's available for public use and for a lot of different activities. And that pie is limited, and everybody wants a piece of it for a different use. On this ranger district alone, we've got timber sales, we've got cattle and sheep grazing, we've got active mine sites, we've got a lot of recreation, a lot of outfitter and guide and recreation events throughout the year. And, you know, we have a 750,000-acre district. There's only so much land you can provide for every one of these uses. So that's probably the biggest challenge. In this valley, I think one of the greatest challenges is just the demand for recreation and the need to manage critical wildlife habitat. So we're taking a close look at that with every project that gets proposed. And again, we use resources like the Future Forest Roundtable and other stakeholders we reach out to get information and opinions and comments every time we have a proposal.
And since the forest is part of the public lands that the people in this nation own, how do you get the public more involved in their public lands, and, you know, including any students who might want to make a career? You mentioned how you could apply for a job, but how can the average person get involved, or even a student get involved with the forest?
Yeah, Bill, that's another one of our greatest challenges, is just getting the public involved. We're very fortunate in this valley to have a passionate community that understands the benefit of living adjacent to national forest. And so we have a pretty active community here that gets involved, but that's not always the case across the nation. So we're always looking for ways to better get our word out and get our story out, such as interviews like this with you and Katie and Kay, using social media, Facebook, and just making the public realize that their comments are very important to us whenever we have a proposed project. And that is the best way you can get involved in your public lands management, is to understand a project, understand what the purpose and need of that project is, and be willing to participate in that analysis and that public comment period.
If people love their public lands, they need to get involved, because there are other threats, state rights issues that have been in the forefront of some media here lately, over the last few years, the attempt of states to take over public land. But the thing I'm thinking about making things more personal to people is the more people you have recreating on your district, the more possibility you have for wildlife and human conflict. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we've had some tough issues between humans and wildlife in years past, and mostly that's been with our black bear population. I think we're doing a good job of managing it. You know, the more people are in the woods, the more they're going to come into contact with wildlife. And, you know, one example of that was last year we had to close down Lincoln Creek dispersed campsites up the Lincoln Creek Road for a good portion of the summer because some habituated bears had decided to hang out in the area, and they were getting into multiple campsites and breaking into tents and vehicles to get food, because it wasn't being stored properly. Since then, we've been able to find some funding to actually put some bear boxes up there along Lincoln Creek Road, and we hope to get those installed early this summer and get them purchased now and then installed in the summer, so that people can properly store their food in those locked bear boxes and keep the bears safe, keep the visitors safe. You know, the Maroon Bells also has issues with people getting too close to the moose up there. And so we're doing a constant education outreach process with that, just encouraging people to watch the wildlife from a safe distance and not get too close.
And people like to take their dogs with them wherever they go. I used to pull up to a trailhead, and people would be standing there and grab the leash and put it on the dog. So dogs, has that been a problem for you in your district? Is the dogs in wildlife, chasing wildlife and that sort of thing?
Well, moose especially don't like dogs. They'd see dogs, no matter what size, as a predator. And so we are required, actually, folks are required to keep their dogs on leash in the Murrumbell Scenic Area. And then we ask them not to take their dogs on the scenic loop, which goes back into some critical moose habitat back in there. So we're managing that as best we can and using our partners like the Forest Conservancy to help educate those folks when they're up there with their dogs that they need to be on leash and they need to keep a safe distance from the wildlife.
So the black bears, it sounds like you talked earlier a little bit about them. Are they becoming more habituated and more bold then? Or is this sort of reached a peak now that people are aware of the problem and you're trying to take care of it?
Well, I think we're doing a better job of managing and getting the word out about. I think what we're doing is we're better managing the people as opposed to better managing the wildlife. And and because of that, we're coming up with some solutions that are keeping the wildlife from getting habituated to people and to human foods and keeping people much safer. So I think the situation's improving.
Well, that's good news. And, of course, it's not a wildlife problem. The wildlife were here first. It's people doing things that they shouldn't be doing because either they don't know better or they don't care. So we ask you while you're out in the wild areas of the forest, whether it's wilderness or not, to abide by the rules. They're there for a reason. In the next couple of minutes we have, do you have any parting thoughts here?
Yeah, thank you, Bill. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. And always appreciate the opportunity to get our story out. We have a kind of a fun activity coming up. Most of your listeners probably know the World Cup ski races are coming to Aspen Mountain. And we're going to be up there with our snow rangers and Smokey Bear at the top of the mountain each day. So if you're going to be at Aspen Mountain anytime Wednesday through Saturday, stop by. We'll have a tent at the top of the mountain with Smokey. And I know he'd love to see any visitors that stop by. We've also got a prescribed burn coming up in the Crystal Valley up around the Avalanche area sometime over the next month, I would imagine, that we'll hope to be burning anywhere from 200 to 500 acres of wildlife habitat up there to improve the habitat for bighorn sheep and elk.
Are you ready for the fire season this year? We've got about 30 seconds here to...
Yeah, we've hired a number of seasonals already for our fire crews, and they're getting trained up. And you know, we're always ready and prepared for any wildfire that pops up, and we're at the same time doing what we hope is preventive management with our prescribed burns. And yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Tune in to our next show on Tuesday, April 11th at 4:30. This is Bill Kite, your host for the public affairs program KDNK's For Land's Sake. And remember, whatever you do to Mother Earth, do it for land's sake. Thank you.